Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. In fact, whenever or wherever you're listening to this episode of the NI Golf Channel podcast, myself and Emma. Hi, Emma, how are you?
Hello, PK. I'm good. How's you?
I'm all right. We're back for another chat about all things golf. Emma, what's happening this episode?
We are. Right. Well, in this episode, we're going to consider whether the current dominance by Nelly Korda and Mr. Scottie Scheffler is a good thing for the game. Paul, you've also been catching up with Royal Portrush head pro Gary McNeil, who is the 2024 captain of the PGA in Ireland, no less. And as well as all that, we're going to reflect on some of the latest news from around the world of golf.
Right then. All of which brings us nicely to the first port of call, and apparently, shock horror, Rory McIlroy won't be joining LIV Golf anytime soon. We're recording this episode a few days after the Masters, and Rory has had to flatly deny social media stories
Awesome.
that he will be joining LIV. Here's what he said.
I honestly don't know how these things get started. I've never been offered a number from Liv, and I've never contemplated going to Liv. It's again, I think I've made it clear over the past 2 years that I don't think it's something for me. Doesn't mean that I judge people that have went and played over there. I think one of the things that I've realized over the past 2 years is, you know, people can make their own decisions for, you know, whatever they think is best for themselves. And, you know, who are we to judge them for that? But personally for me, you know, my future is here on the PGA Tour, and it's never been any different.
All a wee bit mad, Emma. Just a sign of the nonsense that's going on in the golf world at the minute.
It is, it's bonkers. And you know what? I think also a sign of it is that I personally needed him to come out and say that. Like in the past, 100% would have been like, this is nonsense, this is absolute proverbial. But honestly, I don't know, just I suppose the number of sources and the way they were spinning it about, you know, his attitudes changed, and which is true, you know, there were elements of the truth in all the reporting of it. So Chubby Chandler, whoever's been stirring that pot again, did that very, very effectively. And poor Rory, if he's not got enough going on without having to now spend his time denying that of all things. But yeah, you're right though, it is. It's a sign of the times, I think, shall we say,
I
as many
agree, I
other
think.
things we'll discuss later. Well, did you have one
No.
brain cell half believing it, or are you wiser
Not
than
a
me?
chance. Not a chance. If Rory McIlroy had decided to go to LIV, I would have stopped watching golf anyway. But
There
I
is that.
think, to be honest with you, was there a part of everybody was thinking, not a chance? And then they all thought, well, Jon Rahm said no. And they found the right amount for him. So
Well,
was there that wee bit in the back of everybody's head going, oh God, maybe he's going to do it. So the fact that he had to come out and say it's laughable.
it is really,
And
but
I think it also says a lot about where we are with golf journalism, that this was
yes,
not a
that too.
newspaper that does golf journalism traditionally. And like all the scribes who had been at Augusta, it was nothing. None of them were saying nothing was going on. And yet, because of social media and the way we are, he had to come out and say something. And I think he was very, very clear. So hopefully he's put that nonsense to bed.
Yes, well, it was definitive, wasn't it? The response. There's no room for any doubt in there. And I think to be honest, I think maybe I wouldn't have thought he was going to live. I genuinely thought maybe there's some deal, you know, the ongoing deal and this situation being settled amongst all the tours. I thought maybe something is happened, maybe something's been agreed and somebody's got wind of it and like twisted it the wrong way. But no, we still wait and do not hold our breath for
Like a bit of
that
good
outcome.
news. Yeah, a bit of good news. So another news this last few days, Thomas Bjorn will join Luke Donald as the European Ryder Cup vice captain for 2025 once again. No shocks there, Emma. I'd have thought he'd have been high on the list with his track record and his ability to sort of add a wee bit of seniority around things. However, it has picked up the whole clamour that was going on around the Masters, around Tiger Woods taking charge for the USA. So, is this now Tiger's time? What do you think?
No, not yet. Not yet. Other team events or one thing. The Ryder Cup is another. I think he would see the Ryder Cup captaincy as the end of his playing career on this set of tours, this generation of tours. And there's definitely, I mean, the way he played some of the Masters, that's definitely, he's not quite ready for that now. Whether he should be resigning himself to that, that's possibly a whole podcast in itself. And I don't think, nobody could have been, maybe sadder is a terrible word, but watching him walk up 18 on Sunday there, like he was obviously raging. Like, that wasn't somebody who is ready to slowly drift away into the shadows and go to greater positions of authority.
So definite no for you. I actually think it might happen. You know, I think
this one.
I think that they need somebody to rally them. Live Golf.
Do they?
People leaving, and I think they might need somebody to rally. I don't think the whole Zach Johnson thing has left more questions than answers. Netflix left more questions than answers. And I think there's probably a fair amount behind the scenes discussion going on about who were next. So whereas you're a definite no, I'm going to say potentially there. Which actually, just while we're on that and talking about potentially, I would probably, so if it was a betting scenario, I would probably go 50-50. You're going, not a chance. However, our Masters picks this year were not as bad as previous years.
I think it may be the best of any major that we've had, PK.
So
it was uncanny. Like, are we getting good at this, or are we too predictable?
Let's be honest. The Masters is the smallest field. However,
yes,
I certainly picked Shane and Max, so Max gave me a good run. Shane had a rough time, but he made the cut. And you obviously...
Right. Look at you dropping that in there. Shane had a rough time, but he missed the cut. Just because Wyndham Clark didn't make the weekend. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Wyndham Clark let you down. But Ludwig gave you a good run.
Ludwig gave me a great run. I mean, what a performance. Your first ever major out. And we're in Augusta. And just... I just think he's a class act all round. I really do. He's wise beyond his years. I mean, when you think of it, though, there's only, what, three or four years between him and Scheffler. I'm a massive fan. I think he's great. I did think Luke Donald was potentially a bit off his rocker when he picked him, because no matter how good, but from that moment onward, it's like, here's your big stage, and he just grabbed it, and off he's gone, basically, isn't he? So we are recording between majors this week. The Masters, dominated by Scottie Scheffler, will now make way for the first women's major of the year, the Chevron Championship, which is also a very low-priced favourite in Nelly Korda, who is chasing five. I mean, it's just nuts. Yes, that's five wins in a row. Majors, obviously, maybe one step above, but five in a row? I mean, craziness. So we've got domination in the men's game and the women's game at the minute. But is it really good, do we think, for one person to be that much above the rest? What do you think?
So here's the thing. I'm thinking about this separate. It may be good for women's golf for somebody like Nelly Korda to dominate for a period. And that is because if the dominance goes on, she gets elevated. If she gets elevated, the tour gets elevated. Think what Tiger Woods did. Think what Annika did. Ladies golf hasn't really had somebody like that for the last while, who's really sort of transcends the game.
Yes.
I'm not so sure for men's golf, and that's just because Scheffler's no Tiger Woods, and he's no Rory McIlroy. He seems to be a perfectly nice gentleman.
Why are you saying that? Because that's what really interests me about this. Tiger and no Rory?
Star power is not there.
Charisma are we going for here?
Yes,
is that what you mean? The X factor?
The X factor.
Mm.
And the men's game probably needs a bit more of that rather than just somebody who is just brilliant for playing golf. Golf has a problem. Pro men's golf is a problem. We're seeing viewing figures down. The viewing figures for the Masters were down. But ladies golf doesn't seem to be in that position yet, and having a face and a star name dominating for a period, as like Annika did, or for a while Lorena Ochoa did, even Lydia Ko did, it needs that sort of personality to lift it beyond the niche environment, so that people get to know. Like, Nelly is a name that could everybody could know.
Yeah, like it's like the Caitlin Clark effect that we're seeing in the women's basketball, isn't it? 100%. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think what's interesting, I was thinking about this before, and golf is interesting in the way that when there's dominance, it's obviously it's one person. They've obviously got a team around them, etc., etc. They're always quick caddies, all the rest of it. But when you have, you know, like if you look back in like football history or something, like Man United dominance, or more recently Man City dominance, things like that. You know, it's in the men's game and the women's game, City. It's, you know, it's a team thing. So maybe you don't get quite, I don't want to say as sick of it, but there's a few, you know what I mean? There's more personalities involved. There's more, you know, stories come out of the camp. There's more, whereas when there's one, you know, athlete dominating like that, it's all on them. And you're right, the women's game does need it. But then we're looking at the state of the men's game, like it does need something as well. And it's interesting that we've got somebody who's stepping up and going, hi, I'm kind of the best there's been in a long time. And it's not good enough for us because he doesn't have that little spark or whatever it is.
His brilliance is so overwhelming, and he just is so ruthless about what he's doing. But there's no sort of backstory or no edge or no nothing with it.
But that, are we just... Yeah.
It's maybe us, but...
Are we asking too much? Are we possibly asking for the world on a stick?
If golf is going to try and somehow get eyes back on it, it needs more than Scotty Scheffler hammering everybody week in, week out. Because that's not actually going to make eyes back on it. Now, for golf fans, I don't disagree. He's brilliant. He's a brilliant golfer. He conducts himself well. Everything's brilliant. But if he continues to dominate as he's doing, nobody comes up and there's no rivalry. So I would say men's golf needs that rivalry. Ladies golf would love that rivalry. But at the minute, it needs somebody to step up. I always think of it as like tennis. And you see Serena Williams, Pete Sampras, all those ones, Nadal, Djokovic. When there's three or four really going at it week in, week out, that lifts everything. So I think that's where we are with. So I would be of the opinion that men's golf could do with two or three guys really competing against Scheffler all the time to lift the whole product. And ladies golf would love that, but it's some way off that. So it needs a standout star to take the whole lot up. Now, note, the Chevron Championship has gone to a massive purse. $7 million or whatever. That's a lot for the ladies game, which is a big news. So maybe Nelly Cordifex already starting to kick in.
Maybe. It's been, the purses have been heading up nicely, you could say, in that they are improving. There's obviously still room for improvement in lots of areas, but you can't say, you know, particularly the way the state of the financial world is at the minute, that is encouraging that the sponsors are, and people are putting their money where their mouth is. Like that is good. Maybe it is the Nelly effect. She's, you know, I'm really intrigued to know as well, though, like, is she different from Scheffler? Has she got X factor?
No, in actual fact, yes, you're quite,
if you think about her personality, she's actually quite similar. She's really lovely, but it's not like an Angel Yin or somebody who's like a little bit quirky and a little bit. She just seems like the nicest woman ever, and she's a great family woman and all those things. But yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
There's no right, there's no wrong. I'm sure people would argue with both of us, but that's where we are. But it's interesting to see, and if we come back at the end of the year and have continued just to dominate, whether the game's in a better place at the end of it.
Now, normally when we catch up with our next guest, it's usually all things Open Championship. But this time around, Paul spoke to Gary McNeil about his new role, which is as captain of the PGA in Ireland.
Gary, delighted to have you back on the podcast. How are you up at Royal Portrush?
All good, Paul. All good. A nice, sunny, bright Saturday morning. So members are all turning up to play here. Everybody's happy. So, it's a lovely day today. All
brilliant.
Good.
Good. So, Gary, this episode, we want to talk really about the PGA, the Professional Golfers Association, and your own career and the fact that this year you're the captain of the PGA. So take me way back into the distant past. What was your journey to become a PGA professional?
Gosh, Paul, all started for me down in Warren Point. My mother or my father played golf, but my father's brother Bruce was a very good player down at Warren Point, and he was a captain there as well, 1979 I think it was. And it was around about that time I know that he had spotted me whacking a hockey ball around at home in the yard at the house, and reckoned with a bit of a few golf lessons we could maybe make a golfer out of me. So I was dispatched down to Don Patterson at Warren Point, who was the pro there at the time, and a few lessons with Don. Got involved there at Warren Point, lots of junior activity, a lot of good players as well. I remember Rafferty had kind of come through a few years prior to that. There was good players like Jim Carville and Paddy Gribben around about that time as well. And there was lots of competition, you were aspiring to kind of keep up with these guys at Warren Point, and Don was a great teacher and a great motivator, and he got us all kind of we understood that to get better you had to practice, you had to work hard, you had to practice the right things. He made sure we were practicing the right stuff. We got involved with teams like Fred Daly and started playing boys championships and things like that there, and that's where it all started.
That was your start of your golf journey. But in terms of and when was the sort of thought process, Gary, about PGA and thinking about going down that route? Because not everybody dreams of being a tour professional. Yeah. And obviously you'd spent some time around Don Patterson, who's something of a legend in terms of being a professional, a PGA professional. How much of an impact did that sort of interaction have on you?
Well, Don, always gave me great advice along the way. He was always my teacher and coach, mentor, or whatever, friend. I reached a point, I was very happy, Paul. I was out and playing, and I was making the international teams every year. And at this stage, I was sort of in my early 20s and sort of, everybody said, well, that's all very well. You're playing golf and you're traveling all over the world, but what are you going to do for a living? Amateur golf doesn't pay the bills. So, and I think at that time, I had, my contemporaries at that time would have been Clark and McGinley and Harrington and so on. I mean, Clark went on, and he was the one that probably I played the most golf with back in those days. We would have traveled the length and breadth of the country, playing amateur golf and, sharing cars and all that sort of stuff. And I could see his game going to a different level. And even when he turned pro initially, I can remember still playing quite a bit with him when he was out on tour at the start. And he had got a lot better than I had. My game was pretty good at that time, but it wasn't the standard that he was at. And he was only starting to sort of break through on the European tour and get some good results. And I'd kind of stayed. I'd won the close championship at Ballybunion in 1991 when I was 21. And then the kind of plan was to stay amateur for another couple of years, have a go, see if we could make the Walker Cup team in 1993. And that didn't quite materialize. And then it was at that point where it didn't seem like a sensible move to go and try to start, you know, going and getting your tour card or anything like that there. For me, it was more, well, why don't I go down the PGA route? And this is where I had long conversations with Don about it. He felt that this was a good move. And so what happened was that at Royal County Down, Kevin Whitson had come in and taken over from Ernie Jones there around about 1990, I think it was. So Kev was, he'd started there, and he had a couple of assistants, and David Carney and Neil Manship were assistants that he had with him at that time. And I'd find myself across at Royal County Down from time to time. And next thing I'm in playing with those lads and playing with Kevin. And we had a conversation one day, and Kevin agreed to take me on as a training professional. And that was the beginning of my PGA journey, was Royal County Down. I mean, Kevin had already trained quite a number of assistants back in Scotland. And, you know, he was a very, very well-respected club professional, and a great training professional as well. He gave us access to every area of the business, right from, you know, the bookkeeping and the order, and, you know, the whole day-to-day running of the golf shop. And in those days, we did a lot of club repairs, and particularly at a place like Royal County Down, where you've a lot of old school guys that were still using, you know, persimmon headed clubs, and we were still working on the old gear at that time.
Doing all the whipping and all, Gary, would you have been doing all the whipping and all that sort of stuff?
Whipping, inserts,
whole lot.
The whole shooting match. And I thoroughly enjoyed it as well, Paul. And in a way, it's a shame that we've lost all of that, because there was so much, you know, workmanship went into all that stuff. And, you know, you had guys like up here in Portrush, you know, the great P.G. Stevenson, who was one of my predecessors here, making the clubs that Fred Daly won the Open with and stuff like that. They're shaping them and changing things, or adding more loft, or taking loft off of it, or whatever it might be. But so we got a great grounding there at Royal County Down, a great golf course to play on. And at that time, Kevin was very keen for me to get out and play. And I played hard for a number of years in Ireland and the in the region and in the Pro-Am events and the PGA events that we have. We had a lot of them, and we used to travel, particularly with Neil. Neil was, his game was really starting to take good shape at that stage as well. And we traveled around the country and had a great time playing in the PGA events.
That's two, shall we say, very strong mentors in your background there on the way up the road.
Absolutely. And it was, I mean, we at that time, I mean, it was great. You know, I'm in my 25th year here at Portrush, but at Royal County Down, the business was very similar in many ways. With the clientele were pretty similar. The fact that we were dealing with a lot of tourists, a lot of overseas golfers coming in, Americans, Canadians, Australians, Asians, whatever it might be. And you know, there was, you know, whenever the job came up here at Royal Portrush, I suppose my resume kind of at that time kind of seemed to be a good fit for the job, or at least they thought so here anyway. But but in between, when I qualified in 1997, I went to Dublin. Then I worked for 2.5 years or so down in Dublin at the McGregor Academy, which was at City West out at the Nace Dual Carriageway.
Mainly teaching and club fitness.
Mainly teaching. It was a lot of individuals, groups. It was very high tech, probably ahead of its time, actually, Paul, at that time. A lot of kind of video computer analysis stuff, which was very much a first, certainly in Ireland. Cameras in the ceiling, cameras pointing at you from all directions. And we set ourselves up there, and, you know, got very busy very quickly. I mean, everybody was playing golf at that time. You know, the Celtic Tiger was in full flow, and you know, we had a great few years down there. Thoroughly enjoyed what it did down there, and I was still playing as well. And Dublin was a great base to sort of be at, you know, for going and playing pro-am golf. Kind of manage my own diary, and I could teach, you know, late in the evenings if I had to, and, you know, then head off for 3 or 4 days and play pro-am events. So thoroughly enjoyed my time there. And that was pre-Carton House as well. So all the GUI stuff at that time, you know, the boys squad sessions and the underage stuff was all done at City West. And that was when Howard Bennett was coming across, and then, you know, we would be linking in and assisting Howard. And then whenever Don kind of stepped down from his role as the coach to the Ulster squads, then I was appointed as the Ulster squad coach. So every fourth session, they kind of used the provincial coaches to assist Howard in what he was doing. But so every fourth session that Howard was carrying out, I was with him and learning from Howard and working with the squads and the same squads that I'd been part of, you know, a number of years previously, which was very enjoyable. Seeing a lot of really good players coming through, guys like Graham McDowell and you know, players like that were in part of that at that time. You know, great couple of years down there before coming up to Portrush here in 1999.
Yeah. So in terms of your career, you're now working in what could be considered a business, managing the business at Royal Portrush. Would you have been erring towards teaching over running a shop type thing?
Probably at that time, yes. I'd gone out of the retail end of things and gone very much into the teaching things, which was a great experience. Nothing beats, you know, just teaching players of all standards, you know, from beginners to good players to left-handers, you name it, just everybody that you can teach. And that's where you really cut your teeth and learn how to, you know, communicate with people and, you know, help people improve their games or get better. And I really enjoyed that. So when I arrived at Portrush here, yes, I was very much back into the retail end of it, and a club professional. So combining coaching, teaching, working with the juniors here, you know, developing teams and so on at the club. Because at that time, you know, my predecessor, Di Stevenson, had, you know, his health wasn't great at that time. And I probably, you know, because he was so busy with the, you know, with what was going on here with golfing tourists coming through and so on, that there hadn't been a lot of coaching, a lot of teaching, and, you know, the junior teams probably hadn't had that for a while here. So I really enjoyed getting stuck into that. And of course, you know, there's many other aspects as well that come with that. You're integrated into the club here and with the members, and, you know, the members were very welcoming whenever I started here at Royal Portrush. And, you know, I would have played frequently with them and with the captain, and you know, attended, you know, functions at the golf club and things that were going on. And it was a very easy place to settle into, Royal Portrush, at least of all, a great golf course. And and, you know, one of the lovely things about what I do here is that it's very, very different every single day, because you have a different set of people coming through, different characters, and you know, it's fun meeting all the people and, you know, finding where they're from and talking to them about the golf course or about the experience that they've had, you know, at other venues or golf courses around Ireland or been on their trips, you know.
Is that ambassadorial role that pros at the likes of Royal Portrush and Royal County Down and Royal Dublin and Portmarnock? That's a slightly different thing that you as a PGA profession in that position has to many other pros, because of just the nature of the environment and the venue.
You're right, Paul, and there's a lot of that now. And I probably, that's where most of my time is spent now, is actually you know, talking to people, meeting people, facilitating, be it, you know, people that visit the club, be it journalists or course raters, rankings people, you know, dignitaries or someone that the club wants to look after. So there's quite a bit of that goes on here. I tend to facilitate the most of that. Charlene Reid, who's my senior pro here, Charlene's been with me now for about 12 years or so. And she's in the last couple of years really taken on the retail end of things here at the golf club and the management of the staff and the pro shop here at the club. And that's a big business now. I mean, that's some serious turnover there now, particularly when we're stocking not just Royal Port Rush merchandise, but also Open Championship merchandise. You know, we did that obviously up to 2019 for I was going to say our first Open, our Royal Port Rush's second Open. I know the first second one 68 years apart, but here we are, you know, five years down the line, and we're prepping for another one.
So you've also just had at the start of the year, you were announced as the captain of the PGA in Ireland, which is, it's an honorary position. Let's be clear. It's a meeting and greeting position and a chance to get out and discuss and meet people around the regions. What are you hoping to get out of it, Gary? Given that it is kind of an opportunity simply to meet people.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it, Paul. I mean, I came in sort of quite early in January. We had our AGM down at the K Club, and Eddie Tracy was the last year's captain. So Eddie handed over the reins to me at the K Club back in January. I haven't had a whole lot to do to date, but it all kicks off in a few weeks' time, and I'm very much looking forward to getting out on the road and going and visiting a lot of places that I haven't been to for a while. I'll be meeting a lot of people that I haven't seen for a long time and catching up with people, and actually, you know, one of the lovely things as the captain is that if you choose to play in a pro-am, if you're going to attend a pro-am and you're going to, you know, attend the prize presentation and make the speeches and present prizes or whatever else I need to do, that you can come and play in the event as well. So behind the scenes, I've been putting in a wee bit of extra practice just to try to get myself sharpened up. So when I do go to these to play in some of these pro-ams, that I want to keep it respectable, certainly, anyway, Paul. But so that's what I'm really looking forward to, and going out, and as I said, you know, it's a great opportunity to link in with the other PGA pros as well. Again, as I said, there's a lot of the guys, you know, of my era that are still playing and still playing very well. There's a whole set of new guys that I don't really know particularly well that we'll get to see them playing, and we'll get to meet them and chat with them this year as well. And then there's, you know, there's great things happening in the region too. And we've got a new title sponsor of Elevon, and we've got a wonderful venue for the PGA Championship now at
Palmerston
House. So there's lots to look forward to. And then at the tail end of the year, kind of to mark my year of captaincy, the club here at Royal Port Rush have given us access to the Dunluce Links for 2 days, two-day pro-am, 14th and 15th of October, which we launched it just a few weeks ago. It went out on to all the pros in the region, and they went out on social media, and we filled it within a few days.
No surprises.
We have a long waiting list as well. So it's on a Monday, Tuesday, and we're going to have a pro-am dinner down at Mermaid Restaurant down in at the Remore in Port Rush as well in the evening in between, which will be something a wee bit different for the guys. But you know, everybody's going to be here for that evening, and it'll be quite nice to get everybody to the one place and have a bit of dinner together and have a bit of fun down there. So it's something to look forward to this year, and a few, you know, exciting things like the Irish Open at Royal County Down as well, which would be, you know, nice to go back there and see everybody there again, you know.
And Gary, there has been quite a lot of doom and gloom in the industry around the lot of a PGA professional, and COVID really hit hard. And we're looking at the green grass sites, the club pros, and, you know, the weather's been so poor, they can't get people in through the door. Is the environment increasingly difficult for a PGA professional, or is there still a career to be had?
There's definitely still a career to be had. And I think a lot of the guys particularly at Parkland golf courses have really had a tough the last few years. This increase in rainfall and the conditions that we're facing. Golf in a lot of cases is very much if you get 6 months of the year out of it, that's about the height of it for a lot of people. And I think the PGA professionals have to, you know, where the training is very thorough these days and has been for quite a long time. And I think the PGA professionals do have that ability to teach people. They have their members that they can communicate with. A lot of them have been very, very good at adapting to, you know, change. I think it's recognized nowadays that if you don't have an indoor facility or a simulator or TrackMan or flight scope or whatever it might be, you know, you're going to find yourself in a difficult situation. But at least having something indoors gives you the opportunity to, A, you can continue giving golf lessons, and B, you can continue to do club fitting and carry out club repairs, alterations, whatever it might be. And for a lot of people, that's become, for a lot of the PGA professionals, that has become what it's about for them. And actually, you know, relying on that and communicating with your members, be it through social media or be it through mail shots or emails or whatever, but continuing to communicate with your members and providing opportunities for your members to come and have lessons or get fitted for the latest gear or whatever it is. So they've just had to kind of adapt. But the guys are doing that, and they're understanding that. And of course, you know, for a lot of the PGA professionals, you know, competing and playing and playing for prize money is still a huge part of what they do as well. So, it's really about kind of just understanding where you are and your own golf club and your own situation, and kind of making the most of whatever you've got there.
Yeah, and do you feel that the training that the guys are getting and over the 4 or 5 years is adequate to give them that adaptability, that sort of got to think on your feet, got to be open to new opportunities, got to be ready to switch, if you can, quickly to adapt to the environment?
I think so. And I think they can see it. You know, they'll see it wherever they're training, and they'll see it from, and that's why, you know, having get-togethers, be it conferences or whatever, you know, where you get a lot of pros together one time, it's a great place to listen and hear what's going on elsewhere and consult on other professionals and linking in with them. I mean, there's WhatsApp groups. I'm part of the TGI WhatsApp group, and you can see very clearly, you know, the frustration with the guys sometimes with when the weather and the, you know, golf courses are closed, or there's only a number of holes closed, or they can't get buggies out onto the golf course or whatever it might be. But, you know, those groups are there to support them as well, and there's advice to be had. And you know, I know certainly some of the younger guys have maybe consulted me, and I'm sure they would consult other guys, experienced pros are always more than willing to help. The guys like Kevin Whitson, Paul Stevenson, Peter Hanna, you know, guys that have been pros for a long time with a wealth of experience and successful pros are always more than happy to help the younger guys out if they need any advice or they need to run stuff past them. And, that's always there for the fellas as well, or for the PGA.
That's a good point, because obviously you had two of the best growing up and getting into the business, and Don and Kevin recognized as two of the best. And for the trainees at start, that mentorship, is that environment still as strong as it was? Or is it something that you in your role would like to see improved? Is that an area that could improve?
Well, I don't know. I suppose that there's a lot of maybe the younger guys maybe don't know these guys, or they feel that they don't want to trouble them or bother them or whatever. But I think it's important that they understand that is there. And I think the more you get out of your own environment, and the more you get away from your own club, and be it even going to play in winter alliances or going to meet up with other pros, that's where a lot of good things get discussed. And I know certainly I sit down with other pros and we chat and talk, and I might listen in and find out something and think, well, do you know what, that's a good idea, I might implement something like that, come back and put it into place, and you never know what it might, what business it might bring your way. But the training is very, very good. It's very thorough. It covers a lot of areas, and it gives everybody's job is different, and everybody's club is different. But it gives the guys the opportunity to, if they want to focus on teaching, then go down that route, become a teacher, become a PGA coach. If you want to go into management, then you can go ahead and do that. There's the opportunities within the PGA to go down the director of golf route and to become even a lot of guys going into club management. A lot of PGA members going into that now. And then there's the likes of, people club fitting and so on as well, and really focusing and getting stuck into that and being known as the best fitter in their area. So for a lot of people, they'll sort of focus on one area of the business and really try to develop that as well. And that's quite a good way. And particularly, if you get yourself a reputation as being a good teacher, or get yourself a reputation as being a good fitter, that goes a long way and brings in a lot of business with it as well.
Yeah. Brilliant. Gary, listen, thank you very much for coming on and having a chat. Enjoy the season up and down the roads. And hopefully the game's in good nick. I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon enough around Royal Port Russian Open Championship stuff not long now. You must be starting to think, it's been around the corner in a year.
Do you know what? We were just chatting about it a couple of days ago, Paul. This time next year, I think the grandstand build will be virtually complete by the end of April. So anybody, driving past the club here will see a lot of activity. I mean, there's been quite a bit going on through the winter here. Few tweaks on the golf course, nothing major, just a few of the championship tees got enlarged. A couple of them got pulled back a wee bit, number four and number seven. But other than that, no major changes to the golf course itself. There's been quite a bit of work on the spectator areas. Out on the golf course itself, and some of those are getting enlarged, to accommodate, perhaps more people this time round. So it's going to be very exciting. Looking back at 2019, what a great open it was, and a home winner. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. I mean, I think Paul Lawrie was probably the last one at Carnoustie in 99. Yeah. Prior to that, I think probably Tony Jacklin at Lytham was the last, guy to win on home soil. So for Shane to get the job done here, I mean, the atmosphere and the, you know, the excitement over the that weekend back in 2019 was unbelievable. And you know, hopefully we can, you know, have another successful and exciting championship here. It'll be a new set of players. You know, we're going to be seeing people like Scotty Scheffler and Ludwig Åberg and you know, Zalatoris and all these kids. You know, there's a lot of kids that weren't here in 2019. I guess, you know, you're going to have a new set of players that are turning up this time around. But that's going to be great for the country again. And you know, the tickets will go on sale in July, I believe. I think they go on sale during the around about the time of the Royal Troon Open. So everybody's just got to make sure that they get on that. Get on the RNA website, the oneclub.com, and get yourself in, you know, signed up there so you get all the updates and you get in early, get in the ballot, because, you know, it's changed from the last time. You've got to go in the ballot and you kind of, the RNA will allocate the tickets then. We're all up for it. We're all looking forward to it. And it's going to be immense again.
Brilliant. Gary, thanks very much. Speak to you soon.
Paul, absolute pleasure. Great to speak to you, mate.
Right, so the amateur stuff is working and we're back up and running the amateur golf. The season more or less kicked in around Easter. Weather conditions, shall we say, testing, but we're trying. So a few wee updates from around the amateur world here. Lahinch, Aidan Walsh, has taken the lead at the top of the Women's Bridgestone Order Merd after a recent two-shot victory at Lahinch, home fixture. That was in the Women's Scratch Cup there.
Rogan Sound's Sean Keeling was crowned the Bluegrass Irish Boys Amateur Open champion after the tournament was cut short due to strong winds. Flipping weather at Ballybunion. Keeling was in the lead on 7-under after two rounds when officials opted to end the tournament early.
And Carton House golfer Keith Egan produced what's called a nerveless display of ruthless golf. That's from Golf Ireland. To see off home favourite David Brady and secure the Connolly Motor Group West of Ireland Amateur Open Championship, the first big event of the men's season. And actually, they got away with the weather that week. That was over Easter. They got away with the weather that week. Plenty more to come. There's Nations Cup on at the minute. And obviously, they will be gearing up for the East. Hopefully, weather improves and these people won't be going out drowned. And that brings us to the end of the show.
All right, don't touch me.
See, woo. Shaking that ass. Shaking that ass. Shaking that ass. See, woo. Shaking that ass. Shaking that ass. Shaking that ass.